I'm Amy Vickers. I direct the National Enterprise Solutions Practice at Avenue A Razorfish. And the title of this panel or presentation, as you know, is The New Business of Collectivism. I'd like to briefly contextualize it a little bit in some of the work that we've been doing. One of the ideas that I find particularly encouraging is how large-scale enterprises are changing as a result of social computing. Whether it's determining new advertising models, which John Battelle had lots of smart things to say about yesterday, or the notion that customer service is the new marketing, there's a considerable amount that large enterprises can learn from small to mid-sized businesses online and from individual entrepreneurs online. So at Avenue A Razorfish, one of the things that we do is actually talk a lot with our clients about how to release their brand into the wild, if you will. The wild, of course, being listening to and engaging with consumers. In addition to that, we talk a lot about how to use social computing to make the lives of their employees better. And fundamentally, it all comes back to how to potentially even restructure their business to get along better in the world, to be more socially responsible and more sustainable for the long term. So with all that being said, I think what I'd like to do and what I've prepared are a handful of slides on a fairly focused topic of what I'm calling socially network-powered finance. I have a particular history in the financial services sector, and I think that sector, potentially more so, or maybe not more so than others, but potentially most dramatically, is really going to change within the next 5 to 10 years as a result of social media and social collectives, and fundamentally potentially change the way in which global business is done. I'm very pleased to be presenting this particular topic at South by Southwest, knowing the rich history that this conference has. And at the end, what I'm really hoping is that I'm going to try to allow a chunk of 10 minutes, which is a short amount of time, especially in a 25-minute presentation block, to hopefully answer some questions that you might have. And they can really range the gamut along this topic. Just by a quick show of hands, because I know sometimes the limits that we're given as presenters to describe our panels can be a little murky. Is any of that remotely what you guys thought you were coming to hear about? Show of hands? Okay, a good 3/4 of you? Great. The other thing I would ask, just because I'm a really oral person, is if you wouldn't mind turning off your cell phones. And it will, unfortunately, totally throw me off. Thank you. I'm going to project now. Let's see. Okay. So what is social network-powered finance? Potentially a digital evolution of a long ago started revolution. We can consider this in two ways, micro something and crowdsourcing. Of the micro something, there are three dominant types, and I have to look over here because my monitor's not working on double display. So there's micro lending, micro payments, and microfinance. We'll first go into micro lending, which essentially is about extending small loans or microcredit. It historically has been to the under or unemployed or to the poor, to developing nations, to the economically disenfranchised. It's changed considerably in recent years, such that now it's pretty much anyone who has an initiative that wants to do something. where they need backing and they might not be fully bankable. The best example of this is the Grameen Bank. Just to kind of put some stake in the ground as to what the Grameen Bank is, it's a project that was originated in Bangladesh in the 70s. It's not your typical bank, right? There's no collateral, no legal instrument, no joint liability. The total number of borrowers is 6.95 million, 97% of whom are women. And these are predominantly in smaller villages around India, with a staff of close to 30,000. And in its existence, it's distributed $6 billion U.S., with a 98% return rate, which is extremely high for citizen-generated finance collective. The founder of the Grameen Bank won the National Peace Prize in 2006. The digital future of this are sites like Zopa, Prosper, Kiva, and what I'm very proud to say is an Avenue A Razorfish, DNA is our UK affiliate initiative with Oxfam called Oxfam Unwrapped. And I'll show you a few of those sites. Zopa is a UK site, and it's a little bit unlike common initiatives like the Grameen Bank in that Zopa actually does predicate lending based on credit score. But it essentially enables individuals to lend other individuals money. And what the coolest thing about it is, their rate of micro profit return on the money lent is actually higher than banks. So you can like make money by helping other people, by giving them small amounts of money, and you can fundamentally perform this citizen lending business with better rates of return for both yourself and the other individual than large banking institutions. And what we're beginning to see in the financial services sector is large banking institutions actually funding these types of initiatives. Citigroup and HSBC recently both gave a few million dollars, which admittedly isn't a huge amount of money as far as they're concerned, but it is a lot of money in the broader scheme of micro-lending to start some micro-lending initiatives in third world countries on mobile phones. Second example is US-based Prosper.com. Zopa, you'll notice at the top, is indeed coming to the US, so Prosper will soon have competition. But Prosper is kind of like the eBay of microbanking or of microlending, where either as an individual or as a group, you can, you know, give neighbors, friends, strangers money for various initiatives. Kiva.org is a little bit different. This is entrepreneurs in third world countries that are seeking to create businesses. And what you can essentially do at Kiva is join a collective to seed money for a new business. If you want to fund the entire business yourself, you can, or you can distribute your funds to mitigate any risk, or just, you know, if you only have $5 as opposed to $1,000. And then Oxfam Unwrapped is really, it's a version of micro-lending. It's basically about micro-gifting. So if you've ever received a card from a fabulous friend of yours where instead of a birthday present, you received a goat in your name that was given to a village or a family. This was probably part of the Oxfam initiative. Beyond microlending, and I know I'm going really fast, I'm hoping that these examples can serve as conversation starters, because I'd like to leave a little bit of time for discussion. Beyond microlending, there's micropayments. This is really the evolution of the micropayment here. Obviously, we all know what it is. I won't read the definition. Flues, poor beans, poor DigiCash. They were in the 90s. They all went bust. But they were great ideas, and they're coming back. And iTunes is the super successful version of it. But thankfully, the grassroots aspect of micropayments are still there, right? So Zay has, you know, the great Give Me Some Candy, which is at the top now for Jonathan. And then there's the mobile phone version of micro lending. This is really neat. With emerging technologies, you'll be able to basically, whether using your mobile phone or RFID tags or other neat stuff, right, like load up something, and then through these transmitters, like pay for goods. And, okay, just to stop for a second, that's incredible. And I really don't mean that in any light sense. To say that you can pay for something with a smaller unit than a government may have said is the fiscal unit of currency is amazing, right? Like, we all think pennies are useless, but I know plenty of things that I really wouldn't want to pay more than a half penny for. I don't want to carry around pennies. No, but I kind of joke in that regard, but micropayments are very interesting, especially their potential impact on currency. Beyond micro-lending and micro-payments, there's just the broader category of microfinance. And microfinance, which is really tied to social investing, is a very large international community of business thinkers, entrepreneurs, professors from the Harvard Business School to the local college's business school, and people that are just interested in nonprofit or socially conscious work that are engaged in one large collective, largely happening online and in small pockets regionally, about creating new business models with regard to these microfinance. Crowdsourcing. So that concludes the micro part of the presentation. Prediction markets and social investing. So the idea here, right, being that the crowds are gathering, and as a result of that, stuff happens. Prediction markets, you know, I'm a little bummed that I had to put news futures up here. Not that I don't give news futures mad props, but my friend Chris Sun, who's an amazing developer, has CrowdIQ, which is a prediction market that all of you, I would encourage you to go to. It's crowdiq.com, and his servers crashed yesterday as a result of March Madness. So when I went to grab the latest and greatest screenshot, I was foiled. But at any rate, this idea of prediction markets is essentially running ideas or running concepts or running businesses like the stock market, but with the wisdom of crowds. And a really great place to learn is Marketocracy, which is the second screenshot there. Marketocracy is actually turning itself into a business. It's been written about extensively in the business press, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Business Week, et cetera. It was actually started by veterans in the financial services industry. And their idea was, you know what? A lot of people might be actually better at investing than trained investment bankers and then trained investors, because they're thinking about markets differently and they're engaged in different niche activities. And so whether it's tapping into the best young minds in B schools or the best young minds just sitting at home on their computer with an interest in finance, at Marketocracy you can create your own virtual fund class. You can learn all about the nasty stock market and all about investing, and you can essentially create your own mutual funds, your own stock portfolios, and kind of test them out without actually, you know, running the numbers. So it's a kind of virtual market run. 10 minutes? Is that 10? Thank you. I want to wrap this up so we can do. Can just by a show of hands, so I know how much to rush or not rush. Are there any questions bubbling up? Do you guys want to chat for a few minutes? I'll give you time if you do. If not, I'll keep talking. There's some questions. Thank you. Okay. So Marketocracy is very interesting, and again, this idea of bringing the learnings from new enterprises out into the consumer world, we're actually talking with a considerable number of clients about how they can leverage you, the consumer, the user, and what user interests are for refashioning their business. And creating prediction markets is a really great way to do this. So, you know, imagine if, whether it be Apple or whomever else, when they had a new set of products, you know, ran a prediction market for 6 months, you know, a year. Imagine this if a company like Ford Motor Company did it, where they ran prediction markets on new car models and basically enabled individuals to kind of make predicts on the success or the failure of various things and why. And they actually recrafted and rejiggered their business as a result of it. And then lastly, social investing. The two examples here are social funds, which again is more of a hub. And I apologize, the hub examples are just terribly designed, unfortunately. But the hub of social funds is very similar to the previous hub that I showed. This one, the microfinance gateway. So that's the place to go if you want to learn about all this stuff, okay? And then the BEAM, Green Building Blocks. This is a real neat example of how individuals are taking regionalism and taking micro aspects of social investing to connect up with interest groups online. So this is a place where you can go and find all manner of, whether it's green contractors or it's green consumer reviews, the best case studies of building a greenhouse, a green corporation. You want to know what the best dishwashers to buy or what the best, you know, cleaning products are to buy. TheBeam.com is kind of creating regional focused pockets of green communities and really trying to bridge and become a dialogue between smaller regional green organizations and larger enterprise national and global Fortune 500s or even beyond. So it's an interesting dialogue, if you will, between large enterprises and small ones. So those are just a handful of examples of some of the ways in which social networks are really powering what are some fairly compelling changes in business. And with that, I'll definitely open it up for questions. We have maybe like five or 10 minutes if they let us go over.
I was curious, what challenges do you see Prosper facing coming up? Is there anything out there that they may not be predicting or aware of that you see coming up?
Yeah. I've talked to the guys. I don't know that there's anything that they're not predicting. I mean, the biggest challenges, I mean, are twofold, right? There's like the regulatory challenge of what's going to happen when this notion of peer-to-peer lending gets so large that it potentially does become a threat to traditional financial institutions. It's kind of like a Napster record industry thing. And then the other aspect of it is a large majority of these groups, they have to prove a lot that people pay them back. And they all do have fairly high levels of return. You know, there's a lot in the press. Anyone can Google it and kind of see what's been successful and what's not. So beyond that, beyond the return thing and the compliance thing, I think facing competition from one another will be another problem. Zopa has had tremendous success in the UK, and they are coming to the US. And what will be challenging is if they start crossing borders. So peer-to-peer lending is a little bit different than Kiva. Kiva, you kind of like give up your money, and you may or may not get it back. Zopa is really about credit. It's really micro lending. So it comes under different fiduciary laws. Prosper is a little bit more like Kiva, kind of like if you would ask me for $5 and I gave it to you, as opposed to if I refashioned myself a credit agency and I said, well, I'll give you $5 and, you know, but here's the interest that it's going to have and here are the terms and conditions. So the other thing that, as I've been engaged in this community, one of the things we've been talking about are really two things. One, we want to make it as easy for consumers to do it as possible. So I was at the microformats panel yesterday, and I love microformats. I think they're so fabulous. And I think we need to come up with something like that for peer-to-peer lending. You know, I mean, and I'm not talking about something like Google Shopping Cart or Microsoft Wallet. I mean a genuine open format for, you know, whether it's OpenID or an extension of that, so that individuals can kind of have a financial identity online that's not necessarily tied to a bank account or something like PayPal, right? But that they can interact with these sites in a real seamless fashion because they're going to require more information than others. So that's from a consumer perspective. And then from an actual business perspective, I think getting... It would be great if, and there are rumblings of this, similar to Creative Commons and the open source software movement, how they have different licensing blocks. I think we need to figure that out. What are the different crediting blocks? So Zopa's one type, Prosper's another type. I can't say much more than that because I'm definitely not a compliance person. But I do see that as a challenge. Just, and it all goes back to usability, basically making... If it's truly more social and if its goal is to increase the level of transparency and ease than a typical banking institution, I think a large part of the strategy is going to be figuring out those details.
Just one more quick question on that topic. You said one of the challenges will be when they start competing with other banks. Can you make some guess what a tipping point is? I think Prosper right now has 42 million outstanding.
Yeah.
At what point do they become a competitor to
tipping points?
Banks?
Far off. Tipping points way far off. It's just it's in my nature not to think 5 years out, but like 10.
Follow up question on that. Why is that so long to?
Pardon?
Why is that so long to reach the tipping point?
That's a great question.
Because it's the same problem as music or video or other things.
I'm sorry, can you speak up?
It's the same problem as video, music, and other media that the internet revolutionized.
It's not, though, because exchange of money comes under different regulations than exchange of goods and services. So that's much easier. Yeah. It's infinitely easier, in all honesty. Why is the tipping point far off? Okay, two things. I think that it'll exist in small form for the next 5 to 10 years. It'll create a groundswell. Micropayments are probably going to lead. Microlending is probably going to be the most strategically and long-term impactful. Mobile micro payments are the things to watch, definitely in the East. So if we're attempting to gauge a tipping point, I would look at those three things. And again, just as I mentioned, I look 10 years out, not five. You know, if I knew what the tipping point was, I mean, a tipping point, You can't predict what a tipping point is that's that far out into the future,
yeah.
Right? So based on how the trends are stacking up, I can give you those three insights.
Do you see parallel banking system and things like Second Life or things like that as a problem or a solution to that?
That's a great question, too. Second Life's funny.
It's unregulated.
Not funny, haha, either.
It's unregulated.
Second, Second Life, I was in the academy for like 10 years studying like VR. Like, you know, I was on Mushes and Moos in like 92. I mean, Second Life is like a pretty picture over what tons of us geeks have been doing, right, for a long, long, long time. I don't think in its current incarnation it's as interesting as it's going to become when there's a little bit more of a blurring. I can't say much more than that. Micropayments are going to exist in Second Life, period. But that's a given, right?
Unregulated microlending also, maybe. Unregulated microlending could exist in Second Life.
Unregulated microlending has existed since the dawn of time.
Yeah. But
yeah. I mean, it's like gambling too, right? Or pornography, or I mean, it's anything like that. Yeah, absolutely. But are there any other questions? Okay. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of your time here.